Attention listeners, AfterSight's annual hike is coming up on July 27th.
It was a really good experience for me.
Visit aftersight.org/hike and become an audio trekker today.
That hike today gave me so much courage.
You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for this April 26th Friday reading of the Loveland News. My name is Pratima Sampatmar. Today we will be reading the following main articles: Bill Would Protect Whistleblowers by Bruce Finley, Boebert, Trump Jr. Appear Together by Will Costello, A Gift of Bikes by Austin Flesks, Arbor Day Celebration Slated by Austin Flesks, Dismissal of Lawsuit Denied by Judge by Kenna Munson, Temporary Closure Planned as Construction Continues, Windsor Accepts Downtown Master Plan Focuses on Growth by Kenna Munson, and following up with miscellaneous articles. Bill Would Protect Whistleblowers, State Law Enforcement Leaders Object, Saying They Weren't Given a Chance to Shape Legislation by Bruce Finley. Former Edgewater Police Officer Mackenzie Rees hopes to serve and protect again, but first she must get her name removed from a so-called bad cops list maintained by the Colorado Attorney General's office. It landed there, she said, as retaliation after she reported sexual assaults by a supervising sergeant. The sergeant went on to work for another police department until this year, when he pleaded guilty to unlawful sexual contact and misconduct and was sentenced more than 4 years after the assaults in retaliation against Rees. She testified to the state's House Judiciary Committee this week that even after her attacker was exposed, her complaint about still being listed as a problem police officer, quote, is falling on deaf ears every time, unquote. Rees' testimony, echoed by other frontline police officers from Colorado Springs and Denver about retaliation they faced after reporting misconduct, is driving state lawmakers' latest efforts at police oversight. Fresh legislation would require investigations of all alleged misconduct and increased protection for whistleblowers. But the bill, titled Law Enforcement Misconduct, faces resistance from police chiefs, sheriffs, district attorneys, and the Fraternal Order of Police, who contend it would complicate police work and lead to unnecessary prosecutions. While state leaders are committed to addressing police misconduct, the requirement that all allegations must be investigated could create, quote, a caustic culture, unquote, within police agencies, said Colorado Department of Public Safety Executive Director Stan Hilke in testimony to lawmakers during a hearing Tuesday. This bill is harmful to the mission of public safety, Hilke said, raising concerns it would lead to police, quote, watching each other instead of going out and responding to and preventing crime, unquote. The legislation, House Bill 1460, won approval on a 6-5 vote in the House Judiciary Committee. It would require investigations of all alleged misconduct by police, correctional officers, and others who enforce the law in Colorado. Officers who report misconduct would gain the ability to file lawsuits if complaints aren't investigated or they face retaliation. Key elements under discussion include a provision bolstering the Attorney General's power to add and remove names from the Police Officer Standards and Training Database, which bars future employment, and to compel police agencies to provide information for managing that list. Other provisions would require longer retention of police records and prohibit government agencies from charging fees for making unedited police body-worn camera videos available for public scrutiny. Investigating all alleged misconduct is projected to cost millions of dollars as state agencies face increased workloads, requiring more employees in some agencies and increased litigation and liability expenses. Lawmakers sponsoring the bill have agreed to remove a provision that would have established a new misdemeanor crime for officers who fail to report misconduct by their peers. But the increased protection for whistleblowers is essential, said Representative Leslie Herod, a Denver Democrat, in an interview. People need these protections now. This would ensure good officers can be good officers and bad officers who cover up for bad officers can no longer be on the force, said Herod, who introduced the legislation on April 17th. Most police officers do great work, sponsor says. The bill would build on police accountability laws passed following the 2020 Minneapolis police murder of George Floyd, which sparked protests, Harrod said. We still have more work to do. There's no one-shot bill that will fix police accountability in the state, she said. The majority of police officers in Colorado do great work. We need to make sure we have protections in place when that doesn't happen. This is just as important as any other issue we are debating in Colorado. The late-in-the-session legislation would affect the 246 police agencies and 12,000 sworn officers around Colorado. It began when Reese and other police whistleblowers who had faced retaliation approached lawmakers. For Reese, 30, who now supports herself by pet sitting, the feeling of still being punished and prevented from continuing a career she worked toward since childhood is horrible, she said in an interview. There should always be checks and balances, she said. It is exhausting trying to figure this out. You just get this runaround. There's no way out. Reese told lawmakers that she reported two sexual assaults in 2019 by the sergeant to colleagues seeking protection under internal agency protocols and as a whistleblower under existing state laws. Instead, I got served the ultimate sentence of no protection, she said. This year, after his dismissal from the Black Hawk Police Department, former Edgewater Police Sergeant Nathan Geards, who was indicted by a grand jury in 2022 on four counts of unlawful sexual contact and one count of witness retaliation, pleaded guilty to unlawful sexual contact, first-degree official misconduct, and forgery as part of a plea deal. He was sentenced in Jefferson County District Court to 4 years of probation. Edgewater Police Officer Ed McCallan also testified, describing the retaliation he faced after he became aware, quote, that a senior officer had sexually assaulted a junior officer, unquote, referring to Reese, and then weaponized the state's database against her. I was asked to cover that up by my police chief, he said. I was threatened with internal investigations twice and had to meet with a city council member to save my job for doing the right thing. When he went to the Fraternal Order of Police for guidance in the case, McCallan said a contract attorney advised him, quote, to look the other way, unquote. We just need more time, Sheriff says. Colorado law enforcement group leaders and police advocates said their main concern was that they weren't consulted by sponsors of this legislation. We just need more time to dive into this. Arapaho County Sheriff Tyler Brown, representing the county sheriffs of Colorado, told lawmakers. Harrod acknowledged miscalculation in not consulting with law enforcement brass in advance. She and co-sponsor Representative Jennifer Bacon, a Denver Democrat serving as vice chair of the House Judiciary Committee, said they lined up meetings this week to hash out language and amendments before the bill advances. Representative Mike Weissman, who chairs the committee, agreed that support from law enforcement leaders would be crucial, but added they understood the guardedness of the bill's sponsors, given how these issues can go in this building. District attorneys from Jefferson and El Paso counties objected to the proposed requirement that every misconduct claim must be investigated, saying it would create conflicts in carrying out their professional duties. Several lawmakers raised concerns about language in the bill, such as unlawful behavior. Representative Matt Soper, a Delta Republican, said a police officer who was sexually assaulted and chose not to report the crime could become caught up in the system for failing to report misconduct. Or police who might have to make an illegal U-turn while chasing a suspect, hypothetically, would have to be investigated, he said. But the lawmakers broadly supported the efforts aimed at making sure the Attorney General's office manages the database of police transgressors properly. The committee's bill supporters said the compelling testimony from the Edgewater officers and other whistleblowers persuaded them that there's an undeniable problem to address. Former Colorado Springs police officer John McFarlane told of a case in which a fellow officer took shortcuts in DUI investigations and falsely reported hundreds of roadside sobriety tests that never happened. When McFarlane learned of that misconduct and reported it, he said, I was sat in the corner and surrounded by the department's command staff. I was threatened with charges and dismissal if I did not drop the matter. Former Denver police officer Holland Whiston, who was a victim of sexual assault, told lawmakers she faced ridicule within the police department and later was relegated to desk duties. Others who testified included the sister of a man who was killed at a Tesla electric vehicle charging station last year in Edgewater. Crystal Fresquez said family members had concerns about police inconsistencies as they tried to find out how Adam Fresquez died. discovering eventually from a coroner's report that the death involved the use of mace and two gunshots in his back. Jeremy Allen Smith was arrested in the incident. Boebert, Trump Jr. Appear Together by Will Costello. Lauren Boebert, a devotee of the Make America Great Again movement and a strong supporter of Donald Trump, shared a campaign stage with Trump's son, Donald Trump Jr., in Loveland Thursday as the GOP primary election for the 4th Congressional District draws near. Boebert is currently serving as a member of Congress, but not in District 4, a territory comprising the solidly conservative Eastern Plains region of the state, with a small peninsula snaking between Fort Collins and Greeley to include Loveland. Instead, Boebert was first elected in 2021 to the seat representing District 3, covering the vast swath of the western and southern portions of the state, including both Grand Junction and Pueblo. Shortly after a razor-thin victory over challenger Adam Frisch, a former member of the Aspen City Council and a Democrat, Boebert announced that she would not run for re-election in her district, but instead in District 4 on the other side of the state. Prior to this election, the district was represented by Ken Buck, who announced last year that he would not seek re-election and officially resigned from his position in March, citing the party's support for the idea that the 2020 election was stolen by Democrats and the storming of the Capitol on January 6, 2021. Boebert, often described as a conservative provocateur who frequently made national headlines for both her right-wing stances on issues like gun rights, religion, abortion, and gender, and for her personal life, decried RINOs, or Republicans in name only, during her remarks Thursday on stage at Res Church in East Loveland, arguing that a large share of the elected Republicans in Congress were insufficiently committed to conservative values. "I found out quick that I'm actually a professional RINO hunter," she said, to cheers from the gathered crowd. "I took out a five-term incumbent in my first election because he wasn't doing what he was telling voters he would accomplish for them. And just recently, right here in CD4, well, I just hung me a buck. I think it's RINO hunting season." Buck's announcement that he would not seek re-election came before Boebert's announcement that she was switching districts. For his part, Donald Trump Jr. focused on comments on the preceding legal action against his father, which he said was unfair and politically motivated, as well as his connection to Colorado. He lived in Aspen around the turn of the century, a place that he said is turning to the right. "I haven't seen that in so long," Trump Jr. said, "which gives me some hope, actually, that it's not over. People understand what's going on. People are waking up to the insanity that's out there right now." A Gift of Bikes, Kindergartners Learn How to Ride by Austin Flesks. Centennial Elementary School Principal Carmen Polka gathered the school's kindergartners into the gym Thursday afternoon for a special surprise. When they walked in, they were treated to a large multicolored play parachute covering a series of unknown objects. Polka went on to talk to the young kids about the importance of being active and staying healthy and said they had some special guests bringing some special things just for that purpose. When the parachute was pulled away, the group of kindergarten students lit up, smiling, laughing, and clapping, with many joining in together to joyously yell, "It's bikes!" All Kids Bikes, a national nonprofit teaching kindergarten students how to ride bikes during PE class, brought its All Kids Bike Learn to Ride Kindergarten PE program to Centennial on Thursday, thanks to a $100,000 donation from the Yamaha Motor Corporation to offer the program to 11 schools across the country during the 2023-2024 school year, according to a release from the nonprofit. "We are always happy when a donor comes forward," said Carrie Hall, public relations manager for the nonprofit. "We are really excited they are creating this ripple effect of positive change in the community." The Learn to Ride program launched in 2018 with the goal of giving every American child the chance to learn how to ride a bike in school. Each school involved in the program receives teacher training certification, a collection of 24 Strider bikes, pedal conversion kits, helmets, an instructional bike and helmet for the teacher, two rolling metal bike storage racks, and access to a resource portal and live support for the life of the program, according to the release. The program was sponsored locally by Tri-City Cycle, a Loveland Yamaha dealer and recreational vehicle seller, whose representatives both assembled the fleet of bikes for the elementary school students and unveiled them Thursday afternoon. This is not the first school the company has brought the All Kids Bike program to, with a similar donation given to Columbine Elementary School in Longmont last December. Polka said she was contacted by Tri-City about being the recipient of the bikes, and she gratefully accepted in the pursuit of instilling the importance of health and wellness in her students. It is cool to help her out and choose this school. Business owner Brady Welton, who previously lived next to Polka, said ahead of the donation Thursday. To be able to provide this opportunity for the local kids is extremely exciting, said Rachel Bean, marketing and events manager at Tri-City. A lot of our associates have grown up in the area, so to pay it forward is a really fun opportunity. Throughout the afternoon, the gathered and giddy school kids first learned how to safely enjoy riding their bikes, including how to properly wear a helmet, before finally getting to hop on the seat and then taking off. The sounds of glee rang through the school gym as students zipped around, pushing the pedalless bikes with their feet as they raced in a circle together. The bikes are without pedals to serve as training bikes to get children used to riding, but can have pedals attached later. It is incredible, said music and kindergarten PE teacher Mike Robertson. It touches my heart when anybody in the community reaches out to the elementary students in any setting, because this is where impressionistic moments happen. While most of the kindergarten students were focused on enjoying the ride, 6-year-old Weston Gross told the reporter Herald he was having a great time. We can go as fast as he want, he added. For those involved, getting the kids onto bikes and learning how to get active was a positive thing that will expand beyond just a new skill. Polka said that getting kids used to bilateral movement, or using both sides of the body simultaneously, is an important tool so they can get used to using both sides of their bodies and brains. One of the crucial components for kindergarten and elementary is that sense of balance, Robertson said. I think of when I learned to ride a bike or when I taught my kids how to ride a bike. It is a really empowering skill. Lainey Conroy and Kelly Blanks, both kindergarten teachers at Centennial, agreed that getting the kids active and moving is a good that will stretch past just one day. Movement is what all kids need, Conroy said. Our bodies are made to move and they need that. It is giving all the kids a chance to do something they might not otherwise not have the opportunity to do, Blanks added about the program coming to Centennial. Members of the Tri-City team said they were happy to get kids not only active during the school day, but encouraging them to get out and have fun. I love seeing kids get outside and smiling, Walton said, get off their iPads and phones, and enjoy what being a kid is all about. It has to start from somewhere, Bean said. Not all homes are privileged enough to provide that, so we are hoping through this opportunity through local schools we are able to get more kids outside, get them excited about being active, and just get them out there. Arbor Day Celebration Slated by Austin Flesks. Bertel will once again be doing its best Lorax impression and celebrating the trees this weekend for the return of its annual Arbor Day celebration. The event will be hosted by town forester Paul Furness. The event will include a proclamation from Mayor William Karspeck, a giveaway for a sapling spring snow crabapple tree, and a ceremonial planting of a common hackberry tree in the park, according to a release from the town. Winners of a student poster contest will be announced during the celebration on Saturday. Children in 3rd through 5th grades were invited to design a poster that, quote, reflects the importance of Arbor Day, unquote, and what makes trees special through the theme Trees and Me. The winning poster from each grade will be displayed at Town Hall, and each winner will receive a blue spruce sapling to plant at home, according to the release. The Tree City USA designation has been around for 47 years, and Bertaut has earned it 41 of those years. That brings us so much pride, said Town Administrator Chris Kirk in the release. We have a highly qualified, passionate forestry team led by Paul, our town forester. His expertise and the support he receives from our Tree Advisory Committee and the town board are invaluable in preserving our urban forests and open spaces so future generations can enjoy them. Communities can receive annual Tree City recognition by meeting 4 overarching standards, maintaining a tree border department, having a community tree ordinance, spending at least $2 per capita on urban forestry, and celebrating Arbor Day, according to the Tree City USA website. The Arbor Day celebration will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday at Bain Park, 199 South 10th Street. Dismissal of lawsuit denied by judge by Kanna Munson. Larimer County District Court Judge Stephen Girard has denied a motion to dismiss the lawsuit filed against Precious Memories Pet Cemetery and Crematory, Inc. On January 26, Slobber Shop LLC and Western Skies and Animal Rehabilitation LLC filed a lawsuit in which they claimed that Precious Memories breached contracts and fraudulently misrepresented its services in the disposal of pets sent to it on behalf of customers of those Windsor-based veterinary companies. Precious Memories filed a motion to dismiss, saying that the two vet clinics lacked standing to file the lawsuit because they didn't own any pets that had been sent to it for disposal. It also claimed that the lawsuit failed to cite enough specificity to permit a defense. Girard ruled last Friday that the parties had standing to file the lawsuit and may have suffered an injury in fact to a legally protected interest. The court finds that plaintiffs have failed, however, to plead with particularity claims for fraudulent misrepresentation and claims under the CCPA, Colorado Consumer Protection Act. It is unclear what fraudulent misrepresentations were made with regard to specific services, Girard wrote. He granted the plaintiff's motion to file an amended complaint with specific details and gave them 14 days to do so, and then permitted Precious Memories 14 days from that filing to respond. The case is Slobber Shop LLC, DBA Edwards Veterinary Care, and Western Skies Animal Rehabilitation LLC, DBA Western Skies End of Life Veterinary Care, versus Precious Memories Pet Cemetery and Crematory, Inc., case number 2024-CV-30072, filed January 26, 2024 in Larimer County District Court. Loveland Municipal Building temporary closure planned as construction continues, by Jocelyn Rowley. A renovation project that started in January at Loveland's municipal building is winding down, but one last phase remains. On Monday, crews will begin installing new sliding doors at the entrance to the utility billing office, requiring a week-long closure. This final phase is the exterior doors in the sales tax receiving area, said the city's facility manager, Michael Hogan. That area needs to be finished and made cohesive to the project. During the closure, Loveland utility and sales tax customers will be able to access the billing windows through an entrance from Washington Street on the west side of the building. There is also a first floor entrance on the east side, adjacent to 3rd Street. Signs will be posted at each entry to point the way. Those needing access to the elevator during the week should use the east side entrance. During Tuesday's City Council meeting, facility staff will be on site to direct attendees to the appropriate door, Hogan said. Construction on the project started in January, though plans for the renovations go back to 2019. In the first phase, the vestibule and lobby and customer windows of the utility billing area were reconfigured and part of the office was remodeled to accommodate additional cubicles and offices. The new and improved billing windows reopened a few weeks ago, and work move over to the sales tax side of the operation, which is expected to be completed in the coming weeks. For billing clerk Jessica Harding, the ongoing work and temporary relocation have been disruptive from time to time, but the new configuration is working well so far. There's been some occasional banging, she said, like a T-Rex was about to bust through the wall, but it hasn't been too bad. Areas on the second and third floors are also having some work done. In the city clerk's office, across from the city council chambers, an unused window is being replaced with a wall, while the community partnership office is being outfitted with a customer service window. Less visibly, aging building infrastructure was replaced and there were upgrades to the building's access control for security reasons. Hogan said that the project has proceeded smoothly thanks to some lessons learned about historic infrastructure during an earlier renovation that forestalled any surprises. Unless there is an unexpected delay, he said, construction is on schedule and expected to wrap up on May 10th, though there will still be some finished work remaining. All of the trim on the building has to be made special. They don't make it anymore, Hogan said. So we're having some trim delays, so we won't be completely finished by May 10, but we should be moving people back in by then. Total cost for the renovations are just over $1 million, including a 15% contingency. Funds for the project were appropriated in the city's 2023 budget and will not impact the general fund in 2024. Community expansion fees paid by developers were also used for the project. While in-person payments will still be accepted during the week-long closure to the entrance, Loveland utility customers are urged to use the city's online payment portal at go.lovegov.org/utility-billing or pay by phone by calling 970-962-2111. There are also two drive-up drop boxes for payments at the municipal complex between the municipal building and Loveland Public Library and at Loveland Water and Power at 200 North Wilson Ave. For more information about the renovation project, visit go.lovegov.org/civic center. Thank you for joining us for the Loveland News. My name is Pratima Sampat-Marr.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.